it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's up, everybody? It's been a long time, but welcome back to the Talking Chop podcast. This is episode 8. I am Carlos Collazo, and finally, for what feels like the first time in a long time, Brad Rowland, you're back on the podcast with me. How's it going tonight, sir?
I'm good, man. I missed one. I should be held accountable for that. We can get into more about why we're recording in the middle of the week later, but it has something to do with the North Carolina Tar Heels and you traveling all over God's green earth covering basketball, which is just weird because it's basketball and you're covering it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's a weird situation for me. Normally, when you think of basketball coverage, I'd immediately point to you since you are the Hawks guru. You're the advanced analytics basketball guy, and I didn't even follow Ken Pomeroy until 2 days ago. But what are we going to do?
Yeah, listen, Bryce Johnson decided to take over and carry UNC to the Final Four. So, I'm happy for you. That'd be good. And I'm glad we're back on the podcast. It's almost opening day, and it's time for more baseball talk and actual real games in less than a week. So I'm fired up, and I know you are too.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm definitely a baseball-first kind of guy. It's fun to cover the Tar Heels in the NCAA tournament, but this will be the last weekend, for better or for worse, which is good timing considering the opening day. It was right around the corner this weekend. And once that's done, I feel like we'll be able to get back on regular schedule. We did a good job for a while there. 7 straight weeks without missing a Sunday. That was nice. But tonight we're recording on a Wednesday night. And we got some things to talk about tonight. There's been some activity in Braves camp. We've got some moves. So I guess let's just jump right into it. The biggest news item, I guess, for you is Jeffrey Encore made the team. How pumped are you for that? Because I know you talked about how much you like Jeffrey Encore. Obviously, you have your personal ties to him that you discussed in previous podcasts, but what are your thoughts on this? Are you surprised? Are the Braves going to win World Series because Franchi is back on the team?
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth there. I think World Series favorite now. I'm not as excited as some people would like to think that I am. I'm not surprised, only because it's a good PR move for them. There are people that hate Francoeur, and that's kind of been well documented.
Those are probably the same people that like don't like puppies, right?
Yeah, a lot of people on Twitter don't like Francoeur. I get it. Like, he had the thing where when he got set down, he kind of whined, and like people have held on to that for a long time. And also, you know, he just wasn't as good as he was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that Jason Hayward thing where guys come up and they're not quite as good as they were supposed to be.
Can we still say that about Hayward? Is that fair?
No,
I know me and you both think, but do people who don't agree with the analytics, they still not think that he's done enough yet? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons people don't like Hayward is that he was supposed to be this great hitter.
Yeah.
And this like big pot, like 30 home run guy, and okay, he was never that. But no, I'm with you. He's actually been, you know, as good as advertised.
Okay.
Whereas Francoeur obviously was not. He had a couple years early when he was quite good, especially that first year when he was kind of, you know, the prodigal son returning to Atlanta and all that stuff.
The natural comes back.
Yeah, the natural. That's a good one. That was the Sports Illustrated cover, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of him being on the roster now, like, it's a fine PR move. He can hit lefties reasonably well. That's kind of an overblown as to how good he is against lefties. He's not awesome, but he's fine. He's not a horrendous defender. Like, he can do some stuff. And listen, the bigger thing for me is that it's not like the Braves cut somebody of real substance. They got rid of Nick Swisher to make way. Not necessarily just to make way for Francoeur, but, you know, Swisher was, you know, not having a great spring. The Indians kind of bailed out the Braves a bit with a lot of money for that. And, you know, Swisher is probably I don't know if he's better than Francoeur. It's kind of a toss-up between the two of them. But yeah. all things equal, the Braves will probably take the positive PR. They might sell a few more tickets with Francoeur. Yeah, so it makes some sense to me.
I'm with you there. I think once I heard that Francoeur was coming into Braves camp, I kind of just assumed he was going to make the team just because there aren't those other outfield options that you would like to have. So it's not like you're going to be taking Francoeur and putting him on the team as opposed to some other player who could actually help you a little bit more. But it's funny because thinking back to when Nick Swisher first joined the team, I was actually still with Mark Bowman in the locker room. And after games, when this guy would come out after he finished showering and he would come out to talk to reporters, like just his knees were both iced up, ice wrapped around both of them, and he would just wobble out there. And I was like, man, like how does this guy run around out there in the field? So I would have to imagine that Francoeur is a better option just because, like, he has two knees. So, I mean, I hope.
Is that
so.
Good?
I think it's good to have knees. Like, I feel like you can run around a little bit better if you have knees. I'm actually doing some physical therapy for my right knee. So I would say that, yes, having healthy knees is helpful. But Swisher's a nice guy. He might be an overly nice guy. I hope he can do something, hopefully. I don't know. I think it's about done for Nick Swisher, to be honest. I don't really know if he's going to be able to land anywhere else, but I think Francoeur at least gives you something.
Yeah, Swisher was better more recently. Like, he hit 22 homers in 2013 and was a positive player basically every year for about a decade before that. But
yeah,
he's obviously a lot older than Francoeur. And you mentioned it's kind of fallen off a cliff the last 2 years.
Yeah.
He got paid, which is good. Get that money, Nick Swisher. But yeah, he wasn't going to add a lot other than, I mean, he takes a walk. That's about the only thing he still does at this point. And he can't play defense really anywhere. So it wasn't a surprise to see him go. Keeping Francoeur over some of the other guys is kind of where you get into the, pick your poison type of thing. But as far as Swisher, it was not a shock to see him, not be on the opening day roster, in my opinion.
Yep. No, I agree with that. And then kind of staying in similar territory here. It was recently announced that the Braves signed Drew Stubbs to a minor league deal and an invite to really the last couple of days of camp. I mean, he's not going to have a ton of time to make an impression, but all signs pointed to this being trouble for Emilio Bonifacio and or Michael Bourne. What are your quick takes on this? What do you think's the deal right here?
Yeah, I thought
think Drew Stubbs is as a player. I mean, last season was really his first negative WAR season, and before that, he was really kind of a power speed guy with kind of a low on base percentage. So what do we think he's going to be with the Braves if he's even going to make the team?
Yeah, if you ask me today, knowing what we know, I don't think he will make the team. You mentioned this is a guy with three separate 30 stolen base seasons with double digit power in each of those years. So like there's some talent with Drew Stubbs, but you mentioned the batting average issues. He's only hit over, I think, 250 once in his career, in some ugly strikeout numbers. He'd be a guy that would drive Braves fans insane. He walks a little bit, a career 8.6% walk rate, which is just fine.
Yeah, compared to that 30.3%.
Yeah, the 30% strikeout rate would be something that not sit well with Braves fans. But yeah. I don't know. I think the fact that it was a minor league deal, and they could probably stash him away in Gwinnett as sort of an emergency option, you mentioned Bonifacio and Bourne. Bonifacio was already in trouble with the Francoeur announcement that basically said Francoeur's on the team. Swisher being gone, kind of softens the blow for Bonifacio. But in the end, they're probably only going to have room for one of these three guys, I would say.
Yep.
And I think Bourne is the safest bet to do that. He's he's a guy who's been there before. He's sort of the leader type in the clubhouse. So I know those guys' value. And, he can play defense. He can get on base. Bourne's a very low upside guy now at this point in his career, but he's the sort of break in case of emergency option. He's just a lot safer. Bonifacio gives you that value that he can play all over the place, but he's also not very good at playing anywhere, even defensively, and he certainly could never hit. He's very fast, so people think he's a good, he used to hit leadoff and drive us crazy for being a guy who really couldn't hit but always hit at the top of the lineup because he's fast, sort of the Vroom, Jose Constanza type. But if you ask me who's going to make the team, I would probably say Bourne by himself, and then Stubbs ends up in Gwinnett as the guy who they can bring up right away if something goes wrong.
Yeah, and Stubbs is kind of interesting to me just because, I mean, we mentioned how his hitting has fallen off last season. In 78 games, he was just a 195 hitter with a 283 on base percentage. But in 2014, when he was with the Rockies, and I'm going to pull up his splits to see how much damage he did. Just
Coors Field!
Exactly, yeah. But he was a 289, 339, 482 hitter, which is, I mean, that's impressive. It was 12% better than major league average. So I think that there's a chance that he could still hang around and be a productive type guy off the bench for you, but by all accounts, his contact skills are basically gone at this point. And for a guy who strikes out that much and doesn't walk, I mean, you're really limiting what you're able to do offensively. And that's why he's still trying to pick up with a team with just a few days left in spring training. But yeah, let's see. I have his splits in 2014. And yeah, pretty quickly it becomes apparent that he did most of his work at home. He had a 145 WRC plus in Coors Field, and away from Coors Field, that was all the way down to 72%. So,
not ideal. Yeah. He's also 31 years old. Like, that's not over the hill by any means.
Yeah.
But you're talking about a post prime guy who was, you know, a pretty good player in his prime at, you know, 26, 27 years old. But we're looking at a guy who's past that now. And I like the signing because you didn't, I mean, you know, it's a minor league contract. Take anything, a flyer. Yeah, right. Exactly. I like that addition, but if you can get anything out of Nick Swisher, anything out of Drew Stubbs at the major league level this year would be a plus. And I'm not sure he's good, but I'm also not sure that he's useless either. I know Coors Field helps you, but you still have to actually take advantage of it. And those numbers were very, very good. 15 homers and 4 and 24 plate appearances, even at Coors Field, is something when you're also a decent defender. And you can also run. So even if he was up as like a pinch runner type, you know, pinch hitter, somewhat of a power source, you could talk me into that. But in the end, I think he'll probably be in Gwinnett to start the season.
Yeah, and I'm looking at his plate discipline numbers right now. I know I mentioned him losing some of his contact skills, and really across the board, his plate discipline numbers look career worse in 2015. He was normally around 72% contact. And last season that dropped all the way to 63.8. If you look at his swinging strike percentage, he's normally around 11.6 for his career, and that jumped up to 14.6% in 2015. And you can especially tell in his out of the zone contact percentage, which was 53% for his career. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you, but it was 53% for his career making contact outside of the zone. And then 2015, that went all the way down to 37.5. So really across the board, you can see how he's just not putting the bat on the ball like he used to. So if he's not able to do that, I mean, it doesn't look like he can be a valuable offensive player. He doesn't draw walks enough to use that speed that he may or may not still have at this point. So if he can manage to somehow bring that back, that would be encouraging. But based on everything I'm looking at, I'm not hoping for too much at this point with Stubbs.
It's a flyer. That's all it is. That's all we should treat it as. It's just, being that it's this late in the game and Swisher's gone, it's sort of a nice talking point. But it's definitely a peripheral move unless something surprises us.
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty perfectly. Next little note to look at, Mike Fultonevich sent down to Gwinnett. This was today, I believe, yeah.
Yep.
And really throwing a wrench into my starting pitching and bullpen projections that were posted this past week. I'm kind of disappointed about that. Because Fulte, I mean, it seemed like he was coming on strong, and he looked like he was going to do well, and I really wanted to hit my starting pitchers, but looks like I'm not going to do that, Brad. So that sucks. What's the situation now with the fourth? Because apparently Chacin has still not locked down his starting rotation spot either. We still have got two of those up for grabs at this point, but what do you think about the back end of the rotation? Who do you want to fill it, and who do you think will end up filling those two slots?
Yeah, first of all, I'm just glad the Braves stuck it to you by waiting until after you wrote the big piece to send Fulte to the minors.
It's like a couple days late in the bullpen moves. I mean, they're just screwing me over here. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, sometimes the stuff that happens at the end of spring training where everybody's stuff suddenly looks obsolete after a few hours. Just before we move on to the actual guys who are contending for the rotation now, Fulte, it looks like it's basically injury-related. He admitted today to a pool of reporters, including Bowman and DOB, a couple other people, that he basically wasn't going to be ready to come up when the Braves needed that fifth starter spot for the first time. So I think he still has the inside track to get back in the rotation if he pitches well in the minors early and proves that he's healthy.
Yeah, it seems everything I've read, you brush up more on this than me at this point, but is it basically just a matter of him not being able to stretch it out to the starting number of pitches at this point? Like, he still hasn't worked up to that amount of pitching on the mound at this point? Is that what it is? Just kind of behind in his recovery?
Yeah, he's just not ready to go for a starting workload. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that given where he was injury-wise. He's
further ahead of the game than we expected, even at that rate, I would argue.
Yeah, and that was last year, one of his main issues was that he couldn't work deep into games because his pitch count would get up on him. So you factor that in with a guy who's already battling an injury, and you're talking about a guy who would probably have trouble lasting through four innings right now. So you can't throw that guy out there knowing that, you know, it might take him 80 pitches to get through four innings, and good luck with that.
Yeah.
But with him out of the picture, at least for now, it's kind of a three-man race between Williams Perez, Yoelis Chacin, which you mentioned before, and John Gant's kind of come out of nowhere and is definitely in the mix now, according to all people that are plugged in down there with the team. For me, I'd love to see Chacin get a spot, and he was kind of cruising in the early going, but he's kind of had a hiccup recently.
Yeah.
This sort of put him more put that spot more in peril. For me, I would still go with him as the guy with the for me the greatest likelihood of being good this year. And with that last spot, it's interesting. The Braves have sort of been open to the fact that they could keep all three of these guys, meaning that one of these guys would have to go to the bullpen to start the season. Maybe even two of them, because they don't need that fifth spot
for
at least a week. So if they keep all three, then it's sort of a moot point. And I'd probably like to see Gant as a starter more so than Perez. We've kind of talked about Perez a few times as a guy we don't really love. But his stuff might play more in a long relief role, maybe more in a bullpen role, just because he doesn't really have that varied selection of offerings that you look for in a starter. He's more of like a 2-3 pitch guy. Whereas Gant, the upside is not terribly high, but he looks like a starter to me.
Yeah.
Even if he's like a 6 starter. Long term, that might be a guy that you could utilize in that role more effectively than Perez. So for me, give me Chacin and Gant, and we'll roll from there. But just saying that out loud, having two of those guys in the rotation to start the season is kind of a bad omen, especially when your third starter, depending on what you ask, is either Matt Whistler or Bud Norris too. So it's not like this is going to be a good rotation.
We're not going to have guys competing for a Cy Young award here. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Short of Julio getting his peak form over 30 starts, no, I don't think that's going to happen. But John Gant in 2016, we'll see.
Yeah, Gant's an interesting guy for me, and I think I agree with you. I think in general we agree about keeping guys in the starting rotation until they can prove that they're not a starter to us. And if the Braves are planning on starting Gant's service clock, regardless whether he's in the rotation or the bullpen, I'd much rather see him in the starting rotation and see what he can do. I don't really need to touch on Perez much more than you did. I agree with everything you said there. I definitely think his role is a long relief type guy moving forward. And Chacin could definitely surprise us. I mean, he's, what, 28 years old still? And he's shown flashes. So, I mean, if we had to predict the starting rotation at this point, would it be Chacin 4 and Gant 5? Or, I mean, I don't really know what else it would be. I guess maybe the Braves brass believes in Perez as a starter more than we do. But
yeah, it's tough to project just because you don't know what – especially who, I don't really know whose call it is. If it's Freddie's call, he might go with Perez, knowing what Perez was able to do ERA wise last year. We can talk about his peripherals all day, but if Freddie's drawn to what he thinks is production from last year at the major league level, he might lean with Perez. But we also don't know who has the ultimate say there, and we haven't really heard as a lean either way. I think Chacin, unless he's a disaster this week, is in the rotation, but that last spot is going to be up for grabs, and good luck pinpointing what Freddie and Coffey are going to do with that.
All right, moving on to another one of the younger pitchers. This one related to an injury as well, but not as optimistic as Fulte maybe. Manny Benuelos has had some elbow soreness, and he hasn't pitched since March 22nd. They had an MRI. The MRI came back negative. So that's encouraging, but at the same time, this is a guy who had Tommy John surgery back in 2012, and his injury history has really limited him as a starter, I mean, his velocity has never been the same as it was, what it was before that. He's had some, was it floating bodies in his elbow, some structural stuff that he had to get cleaned up last year. So just kind of continued struggles with Benuelos for just staying healthy. This isn't encouraging for me because this is one of those guys where it just seems like he can never catch a break. But what are your thoughts on the situation, Brad? I mean, he was a guy that was going to compete for a back end of the rotation spot entering spring training.
Yeah, I was going to say that if you didn't, I would have loved to have seen Bainwell start the season in the rotation just because that's a guy with real talent. But you mentioned that the injury history is not encouraging. And for this to be happening again, it's not as though he's shut down, at least officially yet, but he's not a factor as far as opening day is concerned. And like this might be, you know, you're talking about arm injuries, shoulder injuries, like anything in that range. Good luck, man. And he wasn't that good last year in that small sample with the big league club, but prior to that in AAA, he was lights out. I mean, a 2.23 ERA in 16 starts, like that's AAA. It doesn't mean a whole lot, but he just turned 25 years old.
Yeah.
And has some stuff. Like he's not a future ace by any means, but you're talking about a guy who could profile as a, you know, middle of the rotation guy. And that's super valuable if they can get him on track. But his whole time with the Yankees, he battled injury stuff, and you never want to hear that kind of stuff, especially now after a few weeks and months of getting ready for the season. It's not, this was a delayed start to spring. It was sort of a shutdown-ish situation late in the game, which is not what you want to see. So I wish he was healthy. I wish the Braves had another option that was more promising for the future. But, you know, take it easy with him. I'm on board with the Braves taking it slow and sort of playing it out in the best possible way there, because that's a guy who can bring value. Even if he ends up as a reliever long-term because he just can't physically hold up as a starter.
Yep.
That happens a lot with these guys who can't stay healthy. They end up going to a relief role and that better suits them. That might be his long-term future. But, you know, even if that's the case, he could be a valuable reliever. He has the stuff for it.
Yep, I agree. And really every day, every time we hear something else, it kind of just puts more of a damper on this whole situation. And like you said, he's a talented guy. And I mean, before he had these injuries, he was like a top of the rotation type of talent. So it is disheartening to hear about his continued struggles in this regard, but hoping the best for him. Hopefully some rest will clear it up. I mean, that's the best case scenario, but it's not looking good at this point. We'll continue to keep tabs on this as it develops. Let's move on to some position players, specifically the hypest position players the Braves have in their organization at this point, Dansby Swanson and Ozzie Albies. And it seems like they're likely to start in different places in the minor leagues, so both of them would stick at shortstop. I mean, last time on the podcast we talked about the merit of Swanson and Albies playing the same infield, switching off between shortstop and second base together. I think I was kind of indifferent to that, considering the great chemistry that we heard about with these two guys. But if this is the case, I think that's a smart move. I would like to see them both play shortstop for as much as they can, because it's the more difficult position. What are your thoughts on this, Brad? We've talked about these guys a lot, but
yeah, we have. It really was just news, and that.
I think it's interesting to talk about that they are going to be starting at different levels. But what do you think about? Because I didn't even get to ask you about who you thought would be the better shortstop. Do you have any preference in that regard?
I think long term you're better off with Swanson at playing shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like you mentioned, I would rather have those guys both play shortstop as long as I can. I don't think either one of them is going to have any troubles transitioning to second base if that's where they end up going long term. Because, you know, obviously long term you have to make a decision at some point.
Or just trade
these
one
guys.
Of them.
Or trade one of them, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think it's very – it would be very short-sighted to move one of them to second base now just so they can play together.
Exactly.
It seems kind of silly to me.
I don't think we even talked about this last time, but I feel like moving one to second now and kind of turning him into a second baseman, although that was never the plan, I don't think. I think it was just to switch him back and forth. I think if you can prove that you can be a competent shortstop moving up through the minors and higher levels, I think that's better for their value. If one of them was to be traded at some point, I think it would be better – for the Braves in that perspective. But
oh, there's no question. Like moving him to second is basically locks you into that player as a second baseman.
Yeah.
And like that's a move you do when they both reach the majors, basically as late as you possibly can. You don't want to do that ahead of time because it kills their value. Like, you don't want to pigeonhole Albies as a second baseman, because if you do that, then if he doesn't pan out, you can't move him. Well, you could still move him as a shortstop, but
you've wasted his development time.
Like, I don't have any fear that these guys can't transition quickly to second base if you need them to at the major league level. So just roll them out. Take it slow with both guys. You don't have to rush them. By the end of the year, they'll both be in double A or higher, I would imagine. So, you know, take it easy. Play both at shortstop as much as you can. See who looks better there defensively. Like, in the end, even if you think that this is your dream middle infield, one of those guys has to move, and you can just pick and choose which one. I think most people would pick Swanson to stay at shortstop long term if they had to choose right now. But doesn't mean it's going to happen long term. Maybe Albies is the second coming of Andrelton Simmons defensively. That's not going to happen.
Can't put that on anyone, Brad.
Yeah, that's agreed. I'm just saying, like, what if something happens and Albies is suddenly incredible?
Yeah. I mean, I've said it since day one that I thought he was a second baseman. He continuously proves people wrong, so you never know.
Yeah, like, I have no beef with trying both guys at short and seeing who sticks. That's basically the end of it. And maneuvering those guys to play with each other is just short-sighted. You don't need to do that right now.
Yeah, I don't think that I should have any kind of merit talking about Braves shortstop prospects, because I once wrote that Tyler Pastrnicki was the future shortstop for the franchise. So I probably shouldn't even be talking to you guys about this. Do you know who Tyler Pastrnicki is, Brad?
Do I know who, the pastor? What do you mean?
Well, you're just so stunned. I don't know if you're stunned that I was stunned. That I wrote that, or you just didn't know who the guy was.
There were many people that thought
he was Rev. The guy.
So, I'm really just reflecting on the era that it was when Pastrnicki was the guy at shortstop.
On Talking Chop, my avatar was Tyler Pastrnicki. I was all aboard that train.
Oh, that is perfection. We should just end the podcast now. Let's just all go home.
Oh man, we probably should, but we're gonna batter on for a few more segments. Talk about a few more things. The great, the legend, the one third of the trio of the greatest bullpen in recent Braves memory, Eric O'Flaherty, has been acquired. He could be the only left-handed relief option the Braves have, at least entering opening day, after Alex Torres was released. What do you think about EOF? Has he got anything in the tank, Brad?
No, probably. No,
with relievers.
You mentioned O'Flaherty. Like, O'Flaherty was fun, like, as part of that trio. Yeah. Now he's 31 now. He was a disaster a year ago. 8.10 ERA in 30 innings. Granted, he had a 4.6 FIP, which isn't good, but it's also not an 8.1 ERA.
Yeah, you're really trying to make it seem okay at this point.
I'm trying. I like EOF. I always did. He was never as good as his ERA was in Atlanta when you look at the peripherals.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, he's probably an upgrade on what the internal options were previously. That's not really saying a lot, because the left-handed options were so bad that none of them are around anymore.
Yep.
Finalized with Torres as kind of the last guy who was cast off. But I have no beef taking a shot on O'Flaherty. If he's good, you can flip him. If nothing else, like, he's a guy with a proven track record. So if he shows that again, that he can be a good lefty specialist, then yeah, go to him. And if not, then, you know, it was a low cost acquisition that you just kind of just flamed out, and you needed a lefty. They had to pick up somebody. They obviously didn't trust Torres. If they sent Torres to minor league camp, and then they just outright released him right after that. So that was not a guy that they were terribly invested in. So O'Flaherty could be worse, could be better, and if he's even decent, this is a win.
Yeah, I'm looking back now at his 2011 season, which is definitely his best season. And his peripherals were better than any other season, but he also had a 92.3%. Left on base, like, strand rate. He stranded 92% of the people that were on base.
That seems good.
Which is incredibly good, and it makes me question if he was ever actually good. But no, he definitely had a few good years, but he's had three negative WAR seasons, not logging a ton of innings because he's just isn't that great anymore. Like you said, this is, like, similar to the Drew Stubbs acquisition. Take a flyer on the guy, see what he can do for you. You don't have any other options that are better that you're going to be taking away from. So, what the heck? let's just get all the old Braves players and put them on the field for the last season at Turner Field, right?
Somebody find Johnny Venters after after his 12 Tommy John surgeries, and maybe he can go out and throw a few innings for us. But
he
He
can throw the opening pitch for the for opening day.
Shout out to Johnny Venters, who was still trying to pitch. It's incredible that he's even still trying to pitch at this level. And that guy was so, so good in it when he was on in his prime. My goodness.
Yeah, I think this just this whole conversation really speaks to how short your career is when you're a reliever. Like, that's why I was perfectly fine with Craig Kimbrell leaving. I mean, I know everyone loves Craig Kimbrell, and he's one of those guys that maybe you think of as an exception to the rule, but relievers are scary, man.
Oh, they're terrifying. I mean, I understood the Braves country's outrage with the Kimbrell trade because, you know, he was awesome as, you know, best closer in the league for the last few years that he was in Atlanta. But you want to sell hard on relievers if they have value. It's the same thing that's going to happen with Jason Grilley. If Jason Grilley is good this year, get him out of here in June. I mean, Grilley's good. He's been good. He was good when he was healthy in Atlanta before.
Yeah.
But
elite relievers are luxuries for teams that can afford them. And
absolutely.
If you're not a team that's competing and you have everything else squared away, you should try to get as much as you can for them. And we've seen in the past the Braves are pretty good at turning some random guys you've never heard of into fairly quality relievers. So that should be the way to do it, in my opinion. But let's talk a little bit about the season coming up. Obviously, opening day is on the way. Do we have any predictions for the NL East? I know I've written a couple of predictions for a couple different outlets that reached out. I know Chris did as well. We did the Playing Pepper thing that's been going on for a while now on the Cards Enclave website. I don't know if you're familiar with that, by the way, but that's always fun to do. But what are your predictions for the Braves this season, Brad? Where do you think they're going to finish in the division? Do you have a win-loss record you want to throw out there at us? Or is it too scary to say?
It is scary. I'm going to say the Braves finish last.
Wow. They're falling behind the Phillies? I'm guessing you're going
Phillies
number four?
Yeah, that's a tough call. I think that's its own tier. The Braves and the Phillies are in their own tier as far as the division's concerned.
Yeah.
They're definitely going to be 4-5. There's pretty much no doubt in my mind about that, even with Miami taking a bit of a step back, in my opinion. Talent-wise, I mean, they do have Stanton and Fernandez back, so there's not too much you can argue with those two guys. But
a lot of people are picking the Marlins as kind of a sleeper team in the East.
I don't see it. I don't. Yeah. They're significantly better than the Braves and the Phillies. There's no question about that. But I think it'll be a two horse race between the Mets and the Nats at the top, which makes any Braves fan cringe because those are teams that I can't stand. As a Braves fan. But, yeah, I'm taking the Braves last. I'm going to say 66-96.
66. All right.
Does that add up? That's right. Yeah, 66-96. I'm going to say the Phillies 67-95, one game ahead of the Braves.
Okay.
Miami somewhere in that 500 range. We'll just say 81-81 for the purposes of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna take the Nats to win the NL East.
All right.
Which is
finally actually do something instead of just
it's that time where the pressure's kind of off Washington and onto the Mets, which is a unique spot for the Nationals because everybody the last few years has been anointing Washington before the season started as the World Series champs, and things have gone very, very wrong. I've taken great pleasure in that as someone who does not root for the Nationals. And the Dusty Baker hire was comically bad, in my opinion. But at the same time, Matt Williams was probably worse. So I think Dusty Baker's an upgrade. And I don't trust the Mets yet. That might be controversial. The Mets pitching is real, and I'm not saying that it's not. But the everything kind of aligned for them in the lineup with Cespedes kind of losing his mind down the stretch last year, and Washington.
Don't sleep on Yoenis now.
No, he's still good.
I'm just
Lou Gehrig, whatever it was last year.
He was for about a month. He did his best impersonation.
He was incredible. But give me the Nats. I think Strasburg finally has the Strasburg season. I wrote this. I had the unenviable task of writing about the Nationals this week as our preview guy for the team.
Just gonna start with your favorite team.
But yeah,
hey, I'm with the Phillies. You guys can check out the Phillies preview Friday. So
get deep in the Phillies preview.
Yes.
I missed that. But no, I'm give me the Nats, and the Mets finish a couple games back. I think the Mets are a wild card team, so they're both getting the playoffs. But give me the Nats.
Cool, I like that because mine's a little bit different. The only thing that we have the same is I think the Marlins are the number three team. I agree with you with the Phillies and the Braves being in that bottom tier, but I do I like the Braves lineup a little bit more than the Phillies just because you got Freeman. I still think Markakis is useful. Ibar is going to be giving you some quality ABs at least for a little while if he's not traded. Inciarte can do a little bit against righties, so I think the Braves lineup is going to be better than it was last year. The starting rotation is where this can make me look terribly stupid because there's no telling what they're going to do, but I think the Braves are going to finish 70-92. That's the number I stuck with for one of my projections, so I'll stick with it here.
Such a homer, Carlos. Such a homer.
Yeah, 70-92, Braves homer over here. The Phillies, I don't think they have enough at this point, so I'll plug them into the cellar again. And then at the top, the Mets pitching is just ridiculous. And Steven Matz didn't really throw that much for them last season, so I think as long as he's healthy, and he's going to come in and really make that rotation even better. I don't know if you can count on all those guys having the years they did last season, but they're all still young. I mean, this is one of the best starting rotations, if not the best in the game at this point. And the Nationals did not get rid of Jonathan Papelbon, so there's no way they can finish first, right? That's going to be my logic moving forward, at least. And I think I despise the Nationals more than the Mets just because I'm a little bit younger and I didn't have the whole Mets hatred growing up. But Bryce Harper also looks like he's entering God mode at this point, so you never know.
Yeah, I found that people in your age range, I mean, we're not that far apart, but I'm significantly older than you.
You old
but,
man, Brad.
Yeah, but I'll always have a special place in terms of hatred for the Mets. But yeah, Nats are definitely the new kid on the block. That everybody in high school and college as a Braves fan hates the Nats the most.
Yeah,
it's hard not to blame them.
When I really started following the Braves seriously, the Mets kind of sucked, so I just laughed at them.
It's like the Phillies. It's the same thing. Like all these young people that don't understand how much that Braves fans hate the Phillies. Like the Phillies were awesome for a while, and it was not any fun as a Braves fan. But now the Phillies are so bad that it's like, oh, point and laugh at the Phillies.
Yeah, the Phillies are like the Nationals were when they first like became the Nationals, and they were like terrible. They were like the worst team in baseball every year. And that's I think that's actually the time when didn't the Nationals, when they were terrible, really like have a good record against the Braves when they were good for a while?
Yes, that is absolutely.
So I think that might be my like the emergence of my hate for the Nationals. But I'm going to take the Mets number one and the Nationals number two after that tangent of my fandom.
I'm cool with that. You know, like I said, it's a two-team race. I'm not going to get mad at anybody that picks anybody except for the Mets and the Nationals. I don't see it with the Marlins. But look, if Jose Fernandez is as good as he's supposed to be,
he'll get traded.
No, he won't.
Hey, do you know who their owner is? That would not surprise
That's
me at
true.
All if they
listen,
traded
listen,
him.
They have the worst ownership in baseball, so they're capable of anything. But
Miami's
scary.
And a spaceship to get to the moon for that guy.
Yeah, if Stan and Fernandez are healthy and cooking, Miami's a bit terrifying. But if not, good luck.
Yeah, still, even then, like I don't think two guys are enough to catapult you above the Nationals and the Mets, especially when the Nationals have their own guy in Bryce Harper who's capable of putting up Stanton numbers. But let's move on to some bold predictions. Do you have anything off the top of your head that you want to throw out there and really shock the world? I think I've got one in my back pocket.
Ooh, go ahead. I might need a minute to gather my thoughts on that one, but you got. I'm sure you got a take that we'll all love.
I don't know if I have like anything specific on this as far as like throwing out a number, but I'm going to say that Matthew Whistler is going to be the Braves' best starting pitcher this season, and I'm going to say he's going to have a sub 3.2 ERA. Is that bold enough to be considered
a bold
definitely take?
Yeah,
he's working with Glavin with that changeup. I want him to ditch the curveball. I want him to just use that slider. I think the slider is going to be consistent this year. That's probably the pitch that I'm highest on. I'm very high on Matt Whistler's slider, which is a very specific thing to be high on. But I like it. I like his mentality. His fastball is better than I thought it was. If he can improve the command there, I think he's got all the tools to be a mid to even top of the rotation guy if he can reach that ceiling. So I'm going to say that Matt Whistler is going to be the Braves' best pitcher at the end of the season, and he's going to finish the year with 3.2 ERA. Please do not hold me to this, because that the more I talk about this, the more crazy it sounds.
So. It is in my notes on my MacBook already. I wrote it down just now.
I regret this immediately, but I'm sticking with it. I like Whistler. Talking to him last year was fun. So, Team Whistler, let's go.
I like Whistler a lot. He did post a 4.71 ERA last year.
Don't tell the people about that.
19 starts, so only a run and a half better. I'll be happy. That's the thing about this. Let me say this now, my mini rant. People assume that if you don't have the highest opinion of the current Braves, that you're not rooting to be wrong.
Yeah.
You know, we're capable of being impartial, at least to a degree, as writers. I often have to cover things that I have no interest in, no rooting interest in, and like I'm capable of being impartial. But in the end, I want the Braves to win. So me predicting a 66 win Braves season, I'll be just fine if they win 83. Like, I'll be very
not gonna
excited
be salty
to
that
be
your
wrong.
Prediction was wrong.
Like, people always want to come back and like point lap. Look, man, I'll be so glad if I'm wrong. I'll be glad if you're right about Matt Whistler.
I'll be thrilled.
I hope he's awesome. I like him a lot, so I hope you're right. I came up with mine while you were doing that also.
All right, teamwork. Let's go.
My bold prediction, at least one of my – I might have two, but my one is that Julio Teheran will be the Braves' all-star representative.
All right. Okay. Which, I think Freddie Freeman is
probably
the favorite,
Freddie Freeman
right?
will not be it.
So you think they'll only have one again?
I may only get one.
This is kind of like a two – I like – this one's interesting because you're kind of banking
two,
on Freeman not
yeah,
being good.
There's
or
two,
like not having an all-star season, I guess.
A couple things there. I think the Braves only get one, and it's Teheran. I think if they get two, it will be Teheran and whoever the closer is,
mm-hmm.
not Freeman. I think it'll either be Grilly or Vizcaino, depending on how that goes. Freeman, I love Freeman, but even if he's good, he plays first base.
Yeah, sorry about that,
Freddie. You kind of have to be awesome to be an all-star first baseman, and it will not help his case if the Braves are bad, which they're going to be, especially offensively. A pitcher can kind of make his own way to a certain degree. Like, win-loss record is archaic, and we know that. Mm-hmm. But if Julio goes out and has a sub-2.5 ERA in the first half, he's going to make the All-Star team. That's what happens.
Yep.
Whereas Freeman, he doesn't really have the power background to facilitate an All-Star berth. Like, he'd have to go into the All-Star rank with 20 home runs or something close to that to really be considered as a All-Star pick at first base. And like, I don't really see that with Freeman.
Yeah, and I don't know if you were going to touch on this, but he's got Paul Goldschmidt and Anthony Rizzo in the same league.
And Joey Votto.
Yeah, and Joey Votto. Just Joey Votto.
Who's awesome. And it was a clear number three, and Joey Votto is incredible. Like, Joey Votto is much better than Freddie Freeman. No
yeah,
offense.
All three of those guys are a tier above Freddie Freeman. I don't
yeah,
think
that's
so,
much and
of a
debate. So it wasn't a shot at Freeman, but it was also meant to be a bit of a bold prediction on Julio.
Mm-hmm.
Julio was kind of bad last year, quietly. But I think he bounces back strong. I'm not sure I'm going to predict him for a sub-3 ERA, but somewhere in that three range, low threes, high twos at the end of the year would not surprise me. He might win 7 games in his Shelby Miller impression from a year ago, but I think who is going to be good. I still believe in his talent. We saw that a couple years ago, how good he can be.
Yeah, I mean, so, if you look at Shelby Miller, he was the lone All-Star representative, and he had a terrible win-loss record. So,
he was so good early last year. I'll never forget the most hate I've ever received as a Talking Chop writer was when I wrote that the regression was coming for Shelby Miller, and people wanted to burn me. And I was right.
You were right.
But that's okay.
What, do you remember anything specific that someone said to you, like an insult or something?
It was really about how I couldn't predict that he would get worse, even though every peripheral suggested he would get worse. I don't remember anything specific, but like, it was a tidal wave. Because remember, this was during the time last year when the Braves were like competing, like surprisingly competing early. Not like lighting the world on fire, but they weren't out of the race yet. They were still sort of in that peripheral wild card hunt early. And Miller was like the biggest key to that. He was awesome, and there was no doubt about that. But the community did not take kindly to me suggesting that he would come back to Earth.
I think he should just come back at all of them right now after we finish this podcast and just
talk about how you're right. I like Shelby Miller too. It pained me. It wasn't like I was saying he was bad. I just said he wasn't going to have a – I think at the time he had like a 1.5 ERA or something.
That's sustainable.
It was preposterous like how lucky he was getting. But anyway. RIP Shelby Miller era, and we can talk more about bold predictions, but I just want to throw that out. I don't even know how we got on that, but that's what happens when we're recording at 11:30 p.m.
Yeah, I feel like when it's just me and you, we tend to get off on tangents even more than when we have guests. I don't know.
We have fun.
We do. I like it. We've got this chemistry built up, kind of like Marcus Paige and Bryce Johnson, right? You like that?
I can't talk about Carolina.
All right, you said you had a second bold prediction. I don't know if I have another one. I might be able to think of one, but you want to give us your second?
I do. I have one more. Adonis Garcia will not be the starter at third base after May 15th.
Wow. You're not giving him any shot, are you?
He might be, like, listen, they might settle into a platoon, like a straight platoon with Kelly Johnson and Garcia. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But this notion that Garcia is going to be the everyday third baseman, I don't get it. I don't see it. Him hitting cleanup is a comedy show, in my opinion. We won't even get into lineup construction because that opening, the quote-unquote opening day lineup that Freddie's been trotting out the last few days in spring training is going to drive me nuts for a team that's bad. I shouldn't get so worked up about lineup construction. But as for Garcia, I just don't think he's that good. For me, it should be a platoon. Even if he proves to be decent, I just don't see him being the long-term guy there. So I think give it a month, maybe 6 weeks, and he'll be either in a platoon or out of a job. That's my second bold call.
I like that one as well. And I also thought of another one. This is going to be about Hector Oliveira because I've been a little bit higher on him than most people, I feel like. So here's his line for 2016. You ready for this?
Absolutely.
All right. 285, 340, slugging, 450 with 23 home runs.
Oh, I don't hate this at all. I'm in on this.
I'm still a little confused as to whether or not this is bold enough, but based on the average Braves fan's perception of Hector Oliveira, I think this would be extremely bold. But he's hit the crap out of the ball. During spring, I'm still not convinced if he's going to be able to hit that many homers, but that's why it's a bold prediction, right? So 23 home runs for Hector Oliveira this season.
I would love that, even though I killed the trade, and I will always kill the trade. I would love that, so that'd be good.
All right. I think that's all I got for you tonight, Brad.
That's plenty of boldness, I think, for one for one evening. We're almost opening day. I couldn't be more excited. Even for a team that we don't have high expectations for, it's nothing quite like the start of baseball season.
Yeah, you know you're a baseball nerd when you're quite excited for this year's team, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. Like, it may not be
fun. We didn't even get to talk about the Braves' food.
Oh, my God.
Can we close on that or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are you going to get a burgerita at Turner Field? Are you going to die at Turner Field eating food while watching this team?
We're not going to go too deep, so let me recommend. This is going to sound funny, but on the CBS Ion Basketball podcast, yes, you heard that right, Ion Basketball.
Okay.
With Zach Harper and my good friend Robbie Calland.
I like Robbie.
They did about 20 minutes on Braves food.
Sorry, we're not going to give you the guys that
tonight. And that was incredible. So go listen to that for all of the real breakdown, but. The Braves just have no shame at all with their new menu items. Carlos's favorite is obviously the burgerita. He's mentioned it offline a few times. But, man, there's like 7 or 8 just incredible, like, just no regard for human life food options at Turner Field. I'm not really sure what they're going for, but whatever it is, I'm on board. They're off the rails and it's great. So yeah, I'm going to go down as, you know, probably within that first week or two and just start trying stuff. maybe I'll do a Talking Chop feature on all the food.
Let's do it.
But yeah, it's going to be the Burgeritza is probably like, number one for me.
We should do like a live podcast where you're actively eating the food and telling us like how your health is declining immediately.
Listen, if we can get good enough Wi-Fi down there, I'm on board for that. I'm sold.
All right. I think that about wraps us up for tonight. As always, you can follow Brad at BT Roland on Twitter. You can follow myself at Carlos A. Colazo. It was a fun talk tonight, Brad. Appreciate that. Opening day's coming up. Follow the site at Talking Chop and be sure to check in on the site for all of our season preview stuff that's been going on. Still some more to come with that, including this Philadelphia Phillies preview, the juggernaut Philadelphia Phillies. With that, thanks guys for listening. Take care. We're going to zip line out of here.